divertirse, campeones.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us on another episode of the Trash Mix Podcast. What number is this now, Joey?
This is episode number 10.
Fuck, episode 10.
That went by fast.
That went by really fast, yeah. Oh, Mike's here, by the way, everybody. Mike Aguirre, see it on 16 millimeter.
What's up, everybody? How are you?
We'll put a sound clip of a projector.
That's perfect. Shit.
That's actually perfect. Yeah. Okay. Today, we're going to talk about a very violent film from 1987, but released until 1991, which is entitled La Venganza de los Punks. I'm sorry, it's not SpongeBob, by the way. I know a lot of y'all were excited about the SpongeBob movie.
Shit,
hey, I'm just saying, because people were confused when they came in. They're like, hey, this isn't SpongeBob. No, I'm sure.
Bob Esponja.
Or Josie. What was playing that night? Oh, yeah, Josie the Pussycats.
Josie and the Pussycats. Yeah, Pussycats, yeah.
Luckily, people were coming for Punks, too.
I was telling you, you should have gone into the other theater and go introduce Josie the Pussycats.
And then Hope was like, I should wear the cat earrings to Punks.
Yeah.
I was like, ah, she should have. But yeah, so today we're going to talk about La Venganza de los Punks. And it's a sequel, or more of a follow-up, if anything, to Intrépidos Punks, which was released in 86. Well, filmed in 86 and released until like 88, I believe. And I wanted to talk about this one and show this one on the big screen just because I felt this one was much more better, I guess, in terms of storytelling. There's a lot of violent scenes in it. And overall, it's just more fun than the first one. Not to say I don't like the first one, but I always felt the second one was more superior than this one. What about you, Joey? What do you think about this one?
Yeah, I think this one is more of a it's more of a crowd pleaser, just for the fact that there's just tons of deaths. And it's not to take away from the original, because the original Intrépidos Punks is a fucking banger as well. But like you said, this one just kind of ups the ante, really. The punks are crazier, the deaths are crazier, and it's just, I guess it's kind of a product of the director himself, that which we'll talk about in a little bit. But yeah, I think this second one, if you're playing for a group of friends, this is probably the one to play.
Yeah, when we played it at the Frito, people were like excited. They were like, you know, like pretty shocked and like, you know, laughing along with the jokes and stuff, screaming at the kills.
Yeah.
It was just amazing.
I was super stoked with the turnout to the Frida, because like, I didn't know how people would be receptive to this. You know, sometimes you get people who are like, oh, we're coming out, you know, but this one, people actually came out for this one at the Frida, and very stoked on the turnout. And thank you, Trevor Dillon, for allowing something like this to happen at the Frida Cinema.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, shout out.
I feel like the Frida is the only one that's going to allow us to do this type of shit.
Isn't it cool? They could play Josie and the Pussycats, SpongeBob the movie, and La Venganza de los Punks.
All in a span of a day.
What theater does that?
Come all on. In one.
That's
Sunday.
Why you have to support places like this. Like, they're playing everything for everybody. They're not playing for a certain crowd. They're playing it for everybody, for whatever they want to see. So yeah.
Do you think the punks turned out for this one, would you say?
There was one guy in particular who, during the intro when we were on stage, who came out. He had like a studded leather jacket. Oh, he had like the black shorts with all the patches stuff.
Yeah, he was literally so studded out. Like it hurt my eyes seeing the light reflect off of all of his studs. And I was just like, yeah, this is probably the most punk guy here, whatever.
He was definitely the most punk of the night for sure. Yeah. Looks wise, at least.
And he won one of the giveaways, right?
He won because he was the only guy there that was actually
waiting for the interview. Yeah. Waiting to be on the podcast. So, yeah, so shout out to that guy. And so. Let's break down the movie a little bit. Let's see. So what exactly is this movie about, Joey?
Well, I know it's called Venganza de los Punks, which in English means the vengeance of the punks. But essentially what this is the cop from the first movie, Marco, you know, he's chilling at home and the punks escape from prison, which is the first scene of the movie. And they just go on a rampage. They kill his family and then he finds justice for his own family. So it's really, it should be called Venganza del Policía, but you know.
But I mean, they got their revenge at first, so, but then it is just mostly about the cop getting revenge.
Which is played by
Juan Valentin,
who is
the greatest mariachi singer that's alive right now. He's not the best, but he's the best one around right now, because he's still the only one alive from that era.
I was about to say, yeah, his era is gone. Like, he's still chugging
along. And that's
along,
how he markets himself now. He's one of the last of the greats, which is true, because he actually is a really good singer. Like, if you guys ever see him live, you guys are going to be like, wow, this guy actually knows how to fucking sing.
And you met him.
I met him twice, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you had him actually see the
lobby card. Yes. And everything. Yeah, he was just like, he looked at it like he was signing, you know, other stuff for other people. And then I gave him the lobby card.
What was his reaction?
So literally he grabs it and then I give him the pen and he just looks at it. And he's just like, híjole. He's just like, oh, God.
Did he elaborate more on it or he was just
he signed it. He was cool about it. Yeah. And then I showed him another one and he said the same thing. He's like, híjole. Like, he's just like, oh, my God.
But do you think it's like an embarrassment for him at chamacos. This point?
Yeah. I don't think so. I think he was just shocked, you know, because, you know, he probably hasn't seen anything like that for so long.
Yeah.
And then the second time was when I had him sign the Venganza de los Punks lobby cards. And he was just like, the same thing. He's like, oh, my God. He's like, híjole.
Hey, he can't say shit. He started it, man. Yeah. He got paid to do it. So.
And then, sadly, he doesn't sing in this movie. Every movie that he started, he sang in. But in this one, he doesn't sing.
You know, there's a scene in this where he actually probably could have had a little song in there. Just right after he quits the police force and he goes to get a bowl of albóndigas or some kind of sopa or some shit.
It looked like pozole and he was drinking the where they pull up and then all the punks are coming around the circle.
Oh my everything. God. Yeah. Okay, yeah. That is he could have sang like a song about missing his family or something.
Something, dude. Yeah. Okay, that was the perfect moment to put it in.
Yeah, the perfect
right there.
Setting. That's when he sees the punks driving up. Yeah, that would have been perfect.
I'm surprised they didn't utilize him more for like the musical aspects of him. In the movie, because like he literally at any point in the movie he does not sing or is musical in any way, and I just was like, okay, cool, like you have a rancheras type of singer that is coming into this and there's like no singing whatsoever, like you know.
Well, I guess there was just no time, and then with this director he was just like, no, we're not gonna have you sing. Damian Acosta, the director, he was a very serious director. He knew how to make violent movies. So when he was given a script of a violent movie, an action movie, he was like, all right, let's get to work. We're going to do it like this, like this, like this. Because he used to be a stunt coordinator, so he knew how to work all that stuff.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And then he would often injure himself, too, for that, you know, like on sets and stuff. So he was known for that, like just being really hands-on, moving around a lot, very serious. He was in like, oh, you know, sit down in the chair. He was on the fucking set right there. And like, all right, let's get this. Wow. Go.
So, that's dope, man. You want a director that's actually putting himself out there like that to make it easier for you as an actor.
And there's several movies, like if you ever like look at his other movies later, like there's scenes for him, like he's in the movie and then he has like a cast on and it's not fake. It's like, no, it's because he fucking injured himself either on that movie or maybe even another movie before him. Okay. Yeah, he has like a cast on, and then one of his last movies, he ended up like crippling himself because of it.
Damn. Yeah. Well, that's kind of a good segue. So I know Vinegar Syndrome released this, and I think Vinegar Syndrome fans will know Damian Acosta because they also released another one of his movies that you screened at your Trash Max Festival. Yeah. Was it 2 years ago, I think?
Yeah.
Violador Infernal, the Infernal Rapist.
The Infernal Rapist.
Thank you, Frida, set him up for a while.
See?
Again, shout out to the Frida, man. Shout out to the Frida.
They literally could not put Infernal Rapist on the marquee, so we had to go with the Spanish.
We just went with
version,
the Spanish.
Hoping people were just like, we didn't see that it said rape in the title.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was some Thea walking outside the Frida like, what the fuck? Looking at the marquee and shit. But he's also known for El Fiscal de Hierro and Calle Sangrientas, which, you know, those are, those were the ones that really spoke. Those are the ones I know of him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's pretty prolific, like you said.
They're very prolific in action and crime. When you see his comedies and his dramas, you could tell he was probably just not into them. That's why they're not good. Okay. You look at his action crime movies, those are his fucking best movies ever. Because he loved those movies.
Can we go back on the festival? How many people walked out during Infernal Rapist?
Infernal Rapist. I always brag about it. Like, I had a walkout, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, it was a guy and his like teenage daughter, like a 13-year-old or something. Like that. That's what they told me.
What an idiot.
That was weird. It's like, why would you bring your teenage daughter to go see the Infernal Rapist?
He probably saw the rest of the movies and thought, oh, it can't be that bad.
Yeah.
And then he watched fucking dudes getting raped in the ass. And
But even like Navajeros on the first day and everything like that. I will confess that on that Sunday, I walked out halfway during Infernal Rapist because it was so intense. And I was like, you know what, dude? I need a break for like 10 minutes. And then came back to it because it was so fucking intense, but it was I think that has been the most memorable screening for me, at least, because having people walk out is like a badge of honor.
Okay, so three walkouts. Mike is the third one.
Well, I don't know if you guys saw this, but during Punk's there was a walkout.
There was a couple that walked out.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I don't know if they were offended or they were just tired or what, but they definitely walked out. I was standing in the back preparing the gear for for the interview stuff
when did they leave in the middle of
it? It was like 30 minutes in, right?
It was as the kills had started. I think it was after the impaling scene.
Oh. What? Like at that point, you're so dedicated in. Like, why would you walk out? That is a great kill.
Oh wow! Okay, so another walkout I can brag about.
They didn't.
Oh, that is too funny.
That's so far into the movie where what's his name? The guy that looks like Groucho Marx gets fucking impaled.
His name is
Tito Guillen, right? That's Tito Guillen. Yeah, and he's a really nice guy. I actually talked to him before. Yeah, he's super nice.
But it's just like you're that far into the movie. That was like almost.
That's
50,
already
50
that's
a, an
that's
hour.
Like, that's about
50,
yeah,
movie.
Almost an hour.
And they walked out at that point.
I believe it was at that wow. first kill. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Well, it was either that or maybe when Tarzan killed the or not killed but you know butchered the sheep.
Oh, okay. I mean that would probably make more sense.
Yeah, that's I guess.
But that I mean those scenes are like pretty like they're, I mean they're 5 minutes apart. So
that's true. Yeah.
If you guys are listening, hit us up and let us know when you walked out so we can bookmark that.
I mean, the only thing I could say is, I mean, if they walked out during the kill scene, the animal, I mean, they ate it at least.
Yeah.
That's always my justification for life. They're going to kill the animal. They got to eat it at least.
Yeah.
That's the circle of life.
Yeah.
Not to be that guy, but as a vegan, I'm going to say it. You know, you can't get mad at someone killing an animal on screen eating it if you're eating a damn animal yourself.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I mean, either way, yeah. Okay, so now we have another one we can brag about.
Yeah,
we got to walk out in Punk's.
Wow, which is like anytime that anybody walks out of a movie because it is like, for me at least, if it's like, oh well, this is boring, I'm walking out, or if it's like with this, I would take it as like, oh, this is really offensive. I'm like, cool, that's a badge of honor. That is offensive, and you walked out on it. Yeah. Like, you literally cannot handle.
And that's kind of how. The producer, Ulysses P. Aguirre, he was very open. Like, he was just like, you know, he likes making violent movies. He knows that shit sells. And if people were shocked and still paid to see it, he's going to take that as a badge of honor. And sure enough, we did it, you know, for him. You know, this is for him, you know.
He'd be happy.
He would be so happy, that somebody walked out and actually fucking paid already, you know.
I mean, that's all that really matters. I don't, you know, who cares if they walk out in the first 30 seconds? They already paid to get in, so the money's already been spent.
The money's been spent, and hey, they got to see some of the movie.
Yeah. You were literally paying for be like, all right, entertain me. At some point, you may offend me or whatever at that point. If you were paying for a ticket for something, I mean, you're about to watch a Punk's movie. What do you think it's going to be family friendly? At that point,
it kind of goes back to people not doing enough research on what they're going to watch, right? But I think part of it also is if you were to read a description of this, most people are going to say that this is a Mad Max ripoff, which it's not really.
It's far from it.
And I think that kind of misrepresents the movie. And I think people go in thinking it's going to be a Mad Max type of film, and it's just so much more violent and more crude.
I told the people before the movie started, I think we're going to watch a really fucking violent movie.
Yeah, because there's like extended scenes of Satan worship.
Yep.
Hermanos, llegó la hora de la adoración. Esta ceremonia es en agradecimiento por haberse cumplido nuestra venganza. Arrodíllense ante nuestro protector. Señor de las tinieblas, tus hijos te adoramos y te pedimos fuerza para vengarnos de nuestros enemigos. Y te ofrecemos la sangre de este animal.
Almost like just promiscuous type of sex throughout the entire movie. I mean, like you have drugs too. Like literally, like cocaine,
sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah, no, literally, this movie is that, and it's like you walk into it. What the fuck do you expect? You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be something that's family friendly. Like, you're going to see some fucking edgy shit. Sometimes, probably stuff of like, you know, people getting fucking coked out of their mind and rape and shit like this. Like, this is a fucked up movie for a normal movie viewer. You know what I mean? But like, if you're into this shit, come watch it.
Con nosotros, policía de mierda.
You can't stand this stuff. There's always another movie playing with a cartoon character playing later in the month. If you're into that, that's cool. But yeah, just don't expect to see violent stuff in that one. So if you're not into violent stuff, go see that one. Well, if you want to see violent stuff, you go to a trash mix show.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you want to do, right? You want to give someone to remember, whether they hated it or loved it. You know, they'll remember walking out because they thought it was offensive, or they thought it was something else, or whatever the case is.
And that's the most memorable thing at this point. I think we're so exposed to stuff on a daily level of like, even with the shit happening in the real world. So like, if you can walk out of something and it impacts you enough to like remember this, it's like, okay, the goal of what we are doing has impacted you, and it's like, cool, it paid off. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just like. You're able to kind of sift through all this shit of daily life, and then here's this movie that you actually remember a few days later. It's just like, okay, great, cool. That's all we wanted this entire time, is for you to remember this movie and come to the next showing and buy tickets to go see a movie. So, at least for me.
No, hell yeah. No, for sure.
I mean, that's the whole point, really. All right, you know, you got to experience something new. And I think, you know, selling it as just a violent punk movie, I think does a good enough job to let you know. Because, I mean, one thing that about this movie and the first Intrépidos Punks that is a little deceiving is that there's no real, like, punk ethos about it. Yeah, I feel like it's kind of what... And even to this day, like, how Mexican society views punk and punk rock is kind of how this movie plays out. Because they don't really have, like, a deep social understanding of what punk is. And it definitely comes across like that on the screen.
Yeah. This is just exploitation.
Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. It's like if you're punk, you rape people.
Yeah. You do drugs.
You do drugs. Yeah. You're an alcoholic. You're all these other things. And there's not like that real like DIY ethic involved in it like that. That is like actually positive of staying away from the other shit. But, you know, I totally agree with you. Like, it is not a full representation of, like, what the punk DIY ethic is entirely. It's almost like this negative thing in a way to society. It's like, you know, you have your suburban values, and here's this thing that is, like, against all that.
This is, how can I say it? This is like the Rosa de Guadalupe, exploiting a topic that you know is not like that. So, in this case, these punks aren't real. is just what your parents think of punks are like.
Like, imagine what they are. Like, this is punk rock. I can imagine. Like
you know, like then there's the emo episode of Rosa de Guadalupe. It's like these emo kids are supposedly, you know.
Emo?
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. It's like, this is just like what the people thought was punk. Like, you know, these punks are bad. These people are not, you know. But it's like, no, it's not really like that. That's just what you think, you know. Because you have conservative values or whatever the fuck it is, you know.
Because this was so the movie was filmed in 87, released in
91. Yeah,
okay, cool. Yeah, so this is like 10 years after the 79 type of punk boom of stuff, and like, I guess the tail end of the 80s at that point.
That's kind of like what it was booming over there too. Like punk. The mid to late 80s, it was booming over there.
Okay.
Yeah, because while you think of the first wave of punk, you know, in the mid to late 70s, it doesn't really reach Mexico until I think like 79, 80. Mm-hmm.
With like the Clash.
The Sex Pistols and that type of stuff. And then, of course, you got like the fusion of like the new wave shit from America coming from the 80s. So Mexico kind of started off a little differently than what people think of punk, essentially, right? I mean, I think the first punk bands in Mexico were singing in English. They weren't even writing songs in Spanish. So that kind of gives you an idea of how punk's growth in Mexico went from, you know, trying to just assimilate to a different culture and then creating their own scene and their own sensibilities.
But do you think now too, with like how punk has kind of died out here in the States, like we still see a bunch of punk bands coming out of Mexico at this point? Do you think it's because we were so delayed to that? You
know, absolutely. Yeah.
Like we still see, even with LA, you still see like a surgence of like Mexican punk bands, whether it's like, you know, just straight punk or like ska punk or whatever it is. And it's just like, you don't really see people being like, hey, we're forming punk bands these days. You know what I mean? It seems like it's very Hispanic influence type of like, I don't know. Like, I maybe because the influence was so late to Mexico in the late 70s and stuff like that compared to here. I don't know. It's just a comment.
No, I mean, it's definitely worth exploring that because, I can't speak for any other city in the country, but I know LA has a huge punk presence in like the East LA areas.
It's still prevalent today. People are still being backyard shows.
1,000%. Like, yeah. I mean, there's tons of even bands that are from here in LA that are making music in Spanish. You know, they're not even singing in English. So, I will go on record and say punk I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but as a thing is dead, as far as like the spirit, but as far as like a music genre, it's thriving here in LA for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's tons of fucking cool ass bands coming out. And I think there's a lot of bands coming out from like Northern Mexico, like Tijuana, like border cities too, like are really thriving with punk. Obviously Mexico City has a thriving scene as well.
Monterrey.
Yeah, another way. Yeah. So, I don't know. Punk is punk dead or is it not dead? I don't know.
I mean, I guess you could interpret it how you want, but I guess for now we can just say punk is Mexican now.
Punk is Mexican. You know what? That's a bumper sticker and a t-shirt waiting to happen.
Punk is Mexican.
Some racist, bigoted person is hearing this. Don't be in denial. Like, your skinhead punk shit is, nobody listens to that shit.
Well, hey, man, look, I know people want to say the Sex Pistols invented punk, and I mean, that's just, it's not true. No. So punk was invented by minorities. Let's just put it out there. Anyone who says otherwise is a fool.
Exactly. Punk is minority. Punk is Mexican now. So I'm gonna get mad.
We're taking it back.
Like, someone's gonna get mad. I don't go for
someone's gonna get mad, but look, the truth is the truth, man. You can't argue against it when you have bands that predate the Sex Pistols that are punk. I mean, you can even go as far as say someone like the Stooges are the first punk band.
Yeah.
I know people just call it proto punk because they kind of blended more things than what punk was known for, but I mean the Sex Pistols were far from being the first punk band.
Maybe pop punk, if anything.
They weren't even real punks, right? I mean, they were
super pop sounding. Yeah. If anything.
I'm not even a fan of the Sex Pistols, to be honest.
I mean, I can't say I hate them, but I don't like them either. But I'm less like when I listen to them and then other bands, it's like they don't really sound punk. They're just like pop punk. You know? Yeah. I don't know.
I like PIL better than Sex Pistols, to be honest.
And then I put on Crass. I'm like, this is punk.
Yeah, Crass is punk.
I was about to ask you right now. Did Crass you get the pre-order punk for the Crass?
Not yet, but I'm going to.
Okay.
But
Vinegar, but just put out the Crass.
Yeah, that Blu-ray. Crass documentary. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, when you listen to Crass and Sex Pistols, who are you going to go for punk?
Crass all day.
All right, I mean,
even though Crass has a different sound and then they do different kind of, you know, the music and everything. It's like their ideology and everything. That's what punk is all about.
You literally have Crass talking shit on the class saying they're bubblegum pop, basically, for the masses at this point. Yeah, like in some of their songs. You're just like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to talk about Crass some more, but, you know, but right now. but all I will say, though, is for sure is Crass is punk.
Yes.
Sex Pistols, no.
No. Crass, I would consider actual DIY punk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where everything they actually lived to the values and ethics that they talked about at that point. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So, yeah. Sex Pistols, they're not even punk.
We'll go into our favorite punk bands later.
Yeah, you know, someone's gonna get mad.
So people are definitely gonna get mad.
Well, you asked during the interviews at the Frida whose people who their favorite punk bands were.
Yeah, and we got some interesting.
What did they elaborate on? Like, I wasn't here for like the first half of it, and then I came back in, and I was like,
but they named good bands though. They didn't name.
Were they just like kind of like, oh, Misfits?
Hey, wait, hold on first.
I know you love the
We're going to put a stop right there because I think everyone knows that the Misfits is the best punk band of all time.
Misfits is punk for sure.
Maybe they're not punk since they play Coachella now, but
I mean, yeah, that's another story there, but yeah, but in the beginning when they started, that was super punk. Glenn Danzig made everything.
You didn't like that Coachella performance, huh?
The performance was terrible.
It was lip-synced.
Not that it was lip sync, but they definitely were phoning it in.
It was very phony. Yeah,
yeah, the set list was garbage. They were off time.
The audience didn't even look.
The
like
audience was fucking
but it was the,
terrible.
It was the original lineup, though, right?
Well, it's for the most Glenn part. And Jerry.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, because Doyle wasn't the original guitarist. He came in afterwards, and of course, Dave Lombardo was, you know, from Slayer, and AC Slade. I forgot where he's from. It's from like Marilyn Manson or some shit. I don't know.
Wow. Okay.
But
it was definitely a phone-in type of event.
Yeah, I think when they first started doing the original Misfits reunions, like they were. I mean, I flew to Chicago to go see it because I was like,
oh,
I was in the LA one. Yeah, it was fucking sick. And that felt like a true punk show.
Well, I will say that the show at the Forum was better than when I saw them in Chicago. I mean, Chicago, I was just like, it was euphoric because, you know, it's my favorite punk band.
Yeah.
And just the fact that Jerry and Glenn were able to put their differences aside and play
huge.
Music game was fucking huge. But when the LA show happened, that shit was the energy inside the Forum was fucking crazy.
So many people were jumping over to get to the fucking front. And I was one of those people.
Yeah,
everybody was crazy that night. I was having so much fun.
I mean, I was in the fucking nosebleeds and we were like 15 deep. And
I was
we
in
were
pit
just fucking...
and I was right close by the, you know, the front right there. And I was like, oh, we all gotta just jump. Some people were getting kicked out. I think like maybe before the last two songs, that's when they were like, fuck it, just go. Who cares? So a bunch of us just jumped over. It was so fucking funny. But yeah, that was punk right there.
And now compare that to what they're doing now. It's just not, that's just not the same. Like they're just walking around, what do you want to hear? And then fucking playing some random, and then people yelling shit and then they don't even play what fucking, you know? So,
okay.
But you know what? Get the bag. They deserve it. They fucking, you know.
They've been around for a while.
Exactly. Exactly.
So Coachella Misfits or Venganza de los Punks? What's more punk?
Coachella Misfits. Yeah. Nah, just playing. Venganza de los Punks. Come on now. Let's do it.
And like I was so happy that we actually had a very good turnout for this movie. Like I was kind of wondering, how are people gonna respond to this? And it just like it felt like kind of like the Misfits and Goons. This was like the screening for them at the Frida. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were just like, all right, cool. There's something that represents us. And then you can like, you can hear the cheering and everything in the crowd during the screening at the Frida Cinema. And it's just kind of like, it started to die out when the sexual stuff started.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, people are getting.
Well, people get weird about sex. Like,
yeah.
Especially violence and sex.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But how are you supposed to cheer on rape, though? You know what
I mean? I'm not saying to cheer on rape, but
but
even in general, like when sex happens in movies, people get weird.
Even
when
Tarzan's making love to this woman,
and
they're just you just hear the crowd kind of go silent, and you're just like, people are processing.
I do regret not recording the audience reactions throughout the movie, though. I brought like a Tascam recorder with me, like with the idea of let me just put record and let it play and record the entire interaction. Because like you said, the crowd was fucking roaring.
Yeah,
they were clapping. They were cheering. They were gasping. It was like the perfect reaction. Like exactly what you would want as a reaction to this movie.
Oh, yeah, that was
this was
movie.
One of the more responsive screenings that we've had.
Oh, yeah. That was like more of an audience right there. That was, what was that movie called that we were just talking about? The one that Frida plays?
SpongeBob?
No, the other one. The Stop Making Sense or what?
Stop Making Sense.
Yeah, yeah.
That was our Stop Making Sense.
I was joking this morning with Hope. I was like, I wish we would have a trash mix version of that with like the, what's his name, Luis Miguel movie, yeah, with the musical. I was like, where it's just people dancing, yeah, the aisles and stuff, oh like that.
God. Well, but
all the Theas are going to show up for that.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. For now, we had this one. This one did have an audience reaction. But people were laughing, clapping, screaming. It was cool. It was awesome. It was just, I was just like sitting there. I had a girl's legs on me right here. I was just chilling, you know. I was like, all right, I got a hyena next to me. The audience is having fun. The movie's playing is awesome.
Yeah.
It was a great night.
That sounds like a true 42nd Street experience.
Yeah, right? No, it's just like, for me, it's just like anytime you can hear like a verbal response from the crowd with these screenings and everything, whether it's like the O's or the ooh, or like, you know, it gets silent or anything like that, you know that people are engaged with what's, yeah, on screen. You know, yeah, what I mean? Yeah. Even the silent parts, you're just like, people are processing what's happening on the screen and trying to interpret what it is they want to respond to it with. And this was one of the movies that I thought with one of the screenings, the Trash Mech stuff at the Frida, it was just like, this was one of the more responsive type of screenings we've, oh, yeah, had compared, yeah, to, I think the last time I felt like this was Infernal Rapist.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the most part, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so too, yeah. Yeah. Actually, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Well, let's transition into the actual movie itself now, yeah, that we've kind of cleared the air of what happened at the screening and stuff. You know, as Armando said, this was shot in 87 but released in 91.
Which pissed off the producer because the censorship is what made it take so long to release.
So well, okay, well, that, let's go there then. Do you know if there's any deleted scenes that
I don't know if there was anything cut when it came out, but I know that they had a different ending, that was it, but nothing really extravagant or anything, just the ending was a little different when it came out, which is just him walking,
uh-huh,
after everything is over, but that's it. But nothing was cut, it was just the movie was held, they didn't release it for,
oh,
a long, the, time.
Okay, they just,
and that really pissed them off because, you know, he wants to fucking put the movie out. You know?
Yeah, you want
to
make your money back, yeah, as
so
quick
it was
as you
that
can.
One, and then Infernal Rapist, and I forget what else. I don't know if it was his production, but another movie. Other movies were being held from release around that time. And then that's when they finally got the release in 91.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it took him a while, and then, you know, it is what it is.
I wonder what the crowds were thinking about this in 91 when they go see this shit, like. It must have been.
I feel like it would have been the same like now, probably. Like that night, you know?
Yeah, yeah, probably.
Probably like, what the fuck? And then laughing.
Okay, so the movie stars Juan Valentin. As we said, he's a mariachi singer, one of the last greats still around. He had a very extensive acting career as well as a musical career, which I'm sure people would either know him from one or the other, or you know, or maybe even both.
Some of the theos I was talking to at the shows, they were like, "Yeah, we love his movies." So I'm like, "Which one's your favorite?" They're like, "Oh, El Vagón de la Muerte." And if you guys don't know what Vagón de la Muerte is, that movie's fucking sad and awful and disturbing. It's about Juan Valentin. He brings his. They're trying to cross over to the border, and the only way they're gonna cross over is through one of those train things.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, they're, like, suffering in there. It's a really brutal movie, but it's really good.
You know, Mexico and trauma, man, they go hand in,
yeah,
hand. You know,
yeah.
People
it's
love
very
to see that.
Yeah, it's a very traumatic movie, and very violent. Same producer as, you know, Punks, Ulises Piaguirre.
Is he really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow, okay.
And he sings in that one, of course.
has to sing.
I think twice.
Actually. I'm surprised we did not get one singing.
I was so disappointed,
movie.
Honestly. That one and Entrepidos Punks, he doesn't sing. Enough.
Well, that's one thing that's missing in this movie is like the constant replay of the song Entrepidos Punks.
Oh yeah, the first movie. Yeah, honestly, after a while, I got so annoyed. I was like, so I was kind of glad this one kind of like steps back, but yeah, I know what you mean.
I mean, it's an iconic song.
Yeah, it didn't need it that or something.
The cool thing about that is, so the band that plays that song is Three Souls in My Mind, mm-hmm, which I guess eventually turned into, well, not turned into, but some the singer, the original singer of Three Souls in My Mind. Leaves that and starts one of the most legendary Mexican bands, El Tri.
Yeah.
But by the time they recorded this, Intrepidos Punks, he wasn't part of the band anymore. It was the drummer was singing that song.
Yeah, but Charlie Hopkins.
Something like that.
Yeah, he's in the movie too. He's one of the punks.
He's one of the punks. Yeah. Okay. Which I'm sure you know fans of El Tri would probably be like, oh shit, hell yeah! So that's a cool little thing there.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, he loves that movie too, Charlie. The Three Souls in My Mind. Drum. Yeah. He's like obsessed with this movie. He's like in love. He's like very proud of it and everything.
I mean, I would. I mean, it's a fun movie.
Like, he's one of those. I mean, pretty much a lot of people in the cast, but he's the main one that's like a champion of this movie. Like,
now, I wonder if our other lead, Tarzan, is proud of this movie.
Yeah, so he was hard to get to interview. Like, a lot of people, like, when I tried helping Vinegar get the interviews, he was not responding to me. They tried to read to him, nothing. But then, like, maybe a year after they were done, he was, like, posting pictures of the movie.
Interesting.
And then it's like, oh, I wonder if they got him for an interview after all. But no, nothing. But I don't know. But he's aware of it. And then, yeah, he was posting pictures of it on his Facebook.
But doesn't want anything to be a part of it.
I don't know. That's the thing.
He's probably just, I mean, as currently he's like the head of like the Mexican Boxing and Wrestling Commission.
Oh, wow.
So he's probably super entrenched in that and busy with that. But because for those who don't know, Tarzan was played by a very famous luchador, El Fantasma. Which he looks like the Phantom, which, you know, El Fantasma.
The superhero.
Exactly, yeah, he looks like the superhero.
That's
there.
That's funny, because your brother was like, oh, he's played by a wrestler. Like,
yeah,
El Fantasma. He was like, what?
And the cool thing for current wrestling fans, his son is a current WWE wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, and he used to wrestle in Lucha Underground as King Cuerno. And right now his name is Santos Escobar, who was part of like the LWO and shit like that. Yeah. So I mean, that's kind of a cool tie in there. And I'm sure there's tons of wrestling fans out there. So, but yeah, he's like a super, I think he's like the perfect person for this role. Cause he's like super buff. He has these like, obviously like wrestling styled, clothing and mask. And so he actually looks like the Shockmaster in for those who know who Shockmaster is in WWE. I'll pull up a picture for you guys to see afterwards. Yeah, so you guys will bust a gut laughing at that shit.
It looks exactly like him.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow, yeah. Okay. You'll see. Once we're done recording, I'll show you and you're gonna fucking die laughing. And then we have Olga Rios, who plays Jarocha, who plays a pretty big, important part of this movie. She's the one that breaks them out of the prison in the beginning, right?
Yeah, her and then the other girls, they helped them break the guys out. And then some of the girls were in the jail, too.
They put a fucking bomb against the wall and just so blow that shit out.
They made it look so easy. It's like, damn, is that how you get out of prison or jail?
I mean, in Mexico, probably. Yeah, they got, like, adobo buildings.
Yeah, it was just funny because it was, like, so quick. It's like, damn, that was quick.
It also has Bruno Rey in this movie, who's, you know, another very prolific Mexican actor. He plays, what is it, a commissioner, or maybe just like the sergeant or the lieutenant or something.
And then he gives like this speech. Remember after Marcos's family's killed, he's the one that gives that speech about like society and all this other stuff.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about, because this movie kind of has a weird thing where it's like they paint the police to be like you know, these saints where they're damned if they do, damned if they don't type of shit. And that people need to, you know, respect the police more because their job is too hard for society to understand and shit, which I thought was a little weird, you know, police sympathy in a movie that's about people killing each other. But I guess it plays in when, you know, our lead decides he wants to quit the police force and go on his own, you know, revenge-seeking thrill.
No, Marco. No puedo darte el caso del asesinato de tu familia para su investigación. ¿Pero por qué, Capitán Rocha? Porque en cuanto atrapes a esos asesinos, los matarás. Y eso sería tomar venganza por tu propia mano. Tú eres un policía, no un matón. Eso dícese porque no le pasó nada a su familia. Pero yo, que la perdí, pienso muy diferente. Quiero esa investigación, Capitán.
Cálmate, Marco. Estás hablando con el jefe.
Pero es que no entiendes, Jorge. Mataron a mi familia. Yo tengo que encontrar a esos asesinos. Será mejor que tomes unas semanas de vacaciones. Cuando te hayas tranquilizado, regresa a tu puesto. Desde este momento renuncio a la corporación. Ahora soy libre. Marco.
Discúlpelo, jefe. Marco está muy alterado.
Compréndalo.
Well, the response we've gotten from a lot of people in the audience for the movie when we screened it at the Frida was it reminded them Death Wish 3. Which
that
I thought
was another thing. Yeah, a lot of people were saying like Death Wish. I never seen Death Wish 3. So, yeah.
You've never seen Death Wish 3?
What?
Oh man. Like, yeah, we gotta
watch it after.
Yeah, we gotta watch that.
Like it is the I would say over two or one. I would rather watch Death Wish 3 over
yeah,
one and two.
Yeah, would you favor 3 a lot though.
Well, Death Wish 1 is kind of hard to swallow sometimes, you know, because it's so intense and it's in your face.
But
2 is even worse.
Yeah, with like a 20-minute rape scene at the beginning.
2
yeah.
is super brutal. And then 3, I think, is when it becomes like, you know, part of the canon universe as far as what the canon is known for.
Yeah, it felt like a comic book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It plays exactly like this movie because it there's no real like through line through all the killings. It's just like this person dies, then this person dies, then this person dies, and then the next and next and next.
And then here's Bronson being like, "All right, let me kill these punks."
Exactly.
Let me just kind of senseless. It's almost like a tit for tat type of thing without real storyline within Death Wish 3. Death Wish 3, it felt very throwaway, but it's very entertaining.
That's yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Death Wish 3 is super highly entertaining.
Yeah.
I know some people would say that part 4 and part 5 are better, which is crazy to me.
Michael Park's one, though, from part 5 was pretty good, though.
Part 5 is fun, but
I liked 5 more than 4.
But I think if you're watching Death Wish to be like, let's have fun with the homies, you're putting 3. Part 3 on.
Yeah.
And like you said, Venganza de los Punks is exactly that. If you want to have fun with your friends,
yeah,
you're watching Venganza de los Punks because it's just a systematic like kill after kill after kill after kill.
You've never seen part 3, man?
No.
Oh, man.
I barely remember the other two.
It's like the white people version of Revenge of the Punks.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the pictures I'm looking at right now, I'm like, they probably were inspired by this.
There's a scene where this fool fucking Charles Bronson, not to go on a tangent here, but Charles Bronson gets RPGs delivered to a P.O. box. And he just goes and picks them up and just starts fucking RPGing fools.
Yeah. One of the final scenes is with the RPG, and then he gets that elephant hunting gun. I forgot what it's called. He calls it Wily. Wily's here, and he goes and picks it up at like a UPS or something. I noticed the response from a lot of the people in
that
the audience
true.
At the Frida.
Some people were saying that. Yeah,
it's Death Wish 3. It's kind of like that. It's just like it's not very like a. Death Wish 3 is kind of like Bronson has experienced stuff through 1 and 2 that were personal to him with family. Trauma, people dying and everything like that. And 3 just felt like he was this entity going through just fighting these punks. And this is what it kind of felt with Valentin during it. And
yeah.
I've experienced all this stuff in some way in this movie, Revenge of the Punks. In the first like 20 minutes, it's like him processing and just being like, I'm just going through as this entity killing off all these punks. And it just felt like within 20 minutes, he was able to deal with what Charles Bronson experienced through Death Wish 1 and 2
point. Well, I mean, you go through a speed room because he literally watches his wife, daughter, and all his friends get fucking slaughtered by these fucking punks. They put them in a room, rape them, and then fucking blast the shit out of them.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a crazy... it's like Squib City in there, man. They were getting shot to shit in that fucking scene. And that's what really sets him up to become the Bronson type character where he doesn't give a fuck anymore. He's over pretending that he has to go through the proper channels. He's just gonna fucking kill some punks.
It felt fucking overdrive for me in this movie at the point where he started bringing out the flamethrower.
Oh yeah,
and burning one of the punks, and I was just like, okay, cool. You see this in movies where like you know people start burning dummies or whatever, but this guy was actually getting half of his body burned movie. Yeah, you're just like, oh shit, and then you see it transition. You know, you see it cut and it goes back to his face and his reaction. You're just like, all right, he's gonna burn this guy the whole way through. It's about to be a doll or whatever. And then you go back and it's still the same actor getting burned the entire way. You're just like, holy shit, okay, this was a risky ass scene. And it fucking pays off because at that point I felt like it brought a lot of the audience into that movie, being like, "Oh, this is cool."
Well, I think that to me that's my favorite kill in the movie because, like you said, his facial expressions when he's burning them—you actually finally see whatever he was searching for. He found it in that moment.
Yeah,
You know, he's grinning, he's smiling. You can tell he's enjoying that he's finally able to bring vengeance for his dead wife and dead daughter.
And he started to fall off at that point. Every other kill beyond that point was him. With
he got sloppy after that part. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. He was getting sloppy, and then the facial reactions were just kind of like psychotic at that point. Yeah, you know.
He chops off one head off.
Yeah,
and it's of course the guy with the fucking spikes with the fucking foil on him.
The only punk that had a real name. Yeah. Everyone else was Manotes, Loco, and this punk name was Beto.
Beto from East LA, Boyle Heights.
That's right. That's right. Dead City Punk. His death was kind of cool too. That was probably the most like I guess like resemble to like an 80s like slasher where, you know, like a Friday the 13th kill where a guy gets his head chopped off.
He's just looking around and then
and then you can see his Liberty spikes like you know, moving in the air and shit. Yeah, I mean, essentially, after Marco decides he's going to quit the police force and go, get vengeance, it's, what was I saying? I lost my train of thought.
That's when he decides he's just going to go after them, remember? Because he comes across them. He doesn't even look for them. He just comes across them, remember?
Yeah.
After everything that's happened, he's like already debating, like, I'm going to leave the force. So I'm going to take a break. I'm going to go on a vacation. And then that's when he sees the punks. All of a sudden, he's like, "Oh shit, there they are!"
Oh yeah, they're all like driving through that town.
Yeah, they just happen to be driving by where he was at. And he's like, "All right, you know what? I'm just gonna go after them. Fuck it." That's when he goes and he does what he does.
Just systematically kills one after the other.
He says, "Fuck the system! I'm just gonna kill these guys. I don't go fuck."
He pulls up to their lair, and there's like this is how you know that the writers and directors and whoever involved producers too. Didn't really know what punk is because you go when they get to their lair, there's like a swastika painted on the thing, you know, Nazi punks, fuck those fools.
Yeah.
And then right next to it, there's like the Star of David, which that was like a hilarious contrast. Oh, yeah. And then you have one dude. I guess this is their callback to the quote unquote origins of punk. There's a guy in there with like the British flag on his jacket.
Yeah. You gotta have the British flag guy on.
I just feel like they were just throwing anything that they've heard that punk is attached to, like a Nazi punk or whatever, they just threw it there.
It's kind of like they saw the Sex Pistols with their stuff, or like, you know, with Sid Vicious wearing the swastika one. Yeah, and they're just like, all right, this is what punk is. It's just offensive.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a, I don't know. I think, again, that kind of ties into them not really knowing what punk actually is.
Exactly.
And why these punks were kind of, you know, destructive or whatnot.
And in the lair, they happen to be satanic. That's where they worship Satan, too. Which gets even more weird. It's like, okay, so they're punks, and then they're
And they're Satanists.
Yeah, and they're Satanists. Like, okay, damn.
Yeah, they sacrifice. They don't sacrifice. They butcher a sheep, and they start praying to Satan. And Tarzan's wearing like a weird dunce cap. I don't know what the fuck that was.
Almost like KKK.
Yeah,
and it was just like, that's what I noticed that, in the response with the Frida. It's just like, that's where a lot of the response came from in that scene with the sheep being killed and gutted in front of everybody and the satanic stuff. It was just like, you can kind of feel the tension in the room of people trying to understand it. But it was like, oh, is it okay to watch this? Or like,
they're just, like I said, they're just...
It's supposed to be offensive.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, yeah. It's supposed to shock you. That's the whole point. It's an exploitation movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so, all right, well, let me ask you guys, you know, like, as we've been saying for the past 40 minutes, this is just like a systematic kill after kill after kill after kill. So, I forgot, let me see. I have them listed here. How many kills are there? There's
like 6, 7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And I guess, seven that they show on screen, and then, of course, all the other henchmen that die in a shootout. So out of the seven main kills in this movie, I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked the people at the Frida. Which ones were your favorite kills?
For me, was the one where he puts the guy, and then that metal bar goes through his mouth.
That was Ojal, right?
Yeah,
that was he tried to start like a rift in the group and try to kill Tarzan.
Too. Yeah, he was like trying to,
the guy that looked like Groucho Marx. Right?
Yeah.
Tito Guillen. Yeah, that was Tito Guillen. Yeah, I love that one.
¿En qué piensas, Ojal? ¿En qué ya estoy harto de que el perro Tarzán nos trate como a sus pinches gatos? A mí también me caí gordo ese güey.
La coca y la mota siempre la administra. A nosotros nos deja puras bachas.
A nosotros nos tiene chupando cervezas y él se toma el buen vino. Muerto el Tarzán, tú serías el jefe, mi rey.
¿Serías capaz de matarlo, Hal?
Sí, Medusa. Te aseguro que toda la banda me seguiría.
Pero si te le enfrentas al Tarzán, te mataría con sus propias manos.
Tiene que haber alguna forma de deshacerse de él. ¿Cómo fregaos no?
Estará muy grandote, pero de un balazo en la cabeza, me cae que se muere.
And the way they did it too, to make it look real, I'm like, oh, they actually did a pretty good job, yeah. Like making it look as real as possible.
That was a good response from the crowd too.
Yeah, that was. I already had a feeling. I was like, oh, people are gonna get fucking crazy with this one. And yeah, that one was good. And then obviously the one where he chops the guy's head off and you see the spikes. You know, it's like, okay, they knew what they were doing. See, this is Damian Acosta right here. He knew what he was fucking doing.
What about you, Mikey?
I have a phobia of snakes. So, like, anytime I see snakes on screen, whether it's, like, even when, like, Instagram reels or TikTok reels, when I see snakes or people handling snakes and stuff, like, that is the most uneasiest I feel visually when I see snakes. So, of course, it's going to be the scene where the dude is, like, basically in a well and being snakes poured on him. But, like, I just wish that scene, though, was a little bit more, like,
gruesome.
Like, you could see the snakes, like, biting him or, like, or even if it's like a fake prosthetic and like a rattlesnake like biting into his skin and stuff. But like the imagery for me enough on that scene, it was just like, okay, that made me feel uneasy, but that's because of my own feelings about reptiles and snakes and stuff like that. I am terrified of snakes. And
jump scares.
And sharks.
And sharks.
And sharks. Like
two things that you will never come in contact with.
Yeah, it was just like, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen you at a beach or in the hiking with snakes.
And it was just like, yeah, no, the snakes and sharks, I don't know what it is. I can't look. Like, I have a hard time even now today, like, looking at pictures of, like, great white sharks with their mouths open.
Pictures?
Like, it just, like, it makes me so uneasy, and it's just like, anyways, I don't want to get into it, but like, yeah, snakes and sharks, I just have a hard time with.
All right, so snake killing scared you? Wow.
Yeah.
Pa que te acuerdes lo que hicieron a mi familia, cabrón. No! 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 Ahí están.
There wasn't like, even that many snakes.
But that was the thing, though. It's just like you just see him dump the snakes into the well, but it's just like the imagery and my own fears of like, oh man, where they bite him on the ankle, they bite him on the fucking calf or whatever, because you don't actually see it in the movie. And it's just like that made me uneasy still. Yeah. I'm just like wondering where they bit him. Because he dies from the poisoning, obviously. But yeah.
And he's handcuffed too. He has like no chance of getting out.
No, not at all.
I thought as we said, the fire scene when he's burning the guy alive.
Yeah,
that was really good. Between that and when he dumps the acid on the girl.
Oh, yeah. That
those two were. Because after, like we said, after the fire kill, he didn't give a fuck anymore. So he was just like, because he was, like we said, he got sloppy. He was getting shot at. He got shot in the shoulder and was just like, all right, fuck, I'm just going to dump this fucking acid on this chick's face. I thought those two were the most gruesome on-screen kills, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the acid one especially. Just the reaction and then the actress's face. It's like so genuine looking.
Yeah.
And then the makeup effect too. It didn't even look really too like fake or anything. Like it looked kind of like, yeah. Like
no, it looked good. I thought, you can actually see it bubbling and turning colors and stuff.
And again, like I said, this is the director right here. He's like, we're going to make this as real as we can. We're not going to just, make it look like, she got it. It's like, no, we're going to make it look like she is getting acid on her face.
And then all of that led to, spoiler alert, Marco kills Tarzan.
Okay, that's probably my favorite one.
Yeah, huh?
The way that's set up and everything, he's like, kill me, and he's like, all right, I'm going to do it, And then that's when you see him. He's hanging him upside down. He's got his big ass fucking knife, and he plucks his eyes out.
My only problem with that was that they made Tarzan look like such a little bitch. Like, he should have put up more of a fight, man.
Yeah. Especially when he's coming, he's like, he's approaching him. You would think, like, at the end of what he thinks is going to be his life, put up or, like, grab him or try to submit him or in some kind of way.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess what it was, he probably just didn't even care at that point. He's probably like, whatever, I'm done. You know,
he's tired. Yeah, yeah. He's coked out, he's hungover, and yeah.
You know how these punks are. Apparently, they're intoxicated. But yeah. Yeah, he just fucking kills him. I was like, oh. And then the reaction with Juan Valentin, he's just like, you know, laughing. I was like, oh, this is great.
And that scene, that fool, he looked just like my Theo Victor. Like, I mean, identical to that. I can't watch that movie without thinking of my Theo.
Oh, shit.
It looks fucking identical to that. For the mustache, the hair, the dark skin, all of it.
Yeah, Juan Valentin looks like a lot of Mexican uncles and dads. For sure. Like, if you guys ever see him in person, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, this guy is, like, chill. Like, this is a guy that you probably would see next door or something.
Didn't I see him at the carne asada at Matias' house the other last week? But then it leads to our, you know, the official ending of the movie. And I don't know. I mean, spoiler alert, you know, if you haven't watched it, go watch it before you listen to this last part if you don't want a spoiler. Yeah. But what the fuck was that? Was it all just a dream?
Perdóname, fue un mal sueño, una pesadilla.
Qué bueno, mi vida. Acuérdate que hoy son los 15 años de la niña y tenemos que preparar todo para la fiesta.
Lo bueno que le pedí permiso al jefe. Y me dio el día.
¿Cómo pasan los años, verdad? 15 años.
It could have been a premonition of what's to come. I don't know.
That's exactly like it is like the response from the crowd at the Frida. It was just like, oh,
like they were let down a little bit.
We were sitting next to our friends in the theater, and they were just like, what? And I was just like, because it for a lot of people that is like a cop out.
Yeah.
Where exactly. It's a dream or whatever, and it's just kind of like, I thought the same thing too. If this was like. This was a dream of something that was actually about to happen.
A premonition.
Yeah, because what I think it's a premonition is because remember the wife's like, oh, we got to get ready for the girl's birthday party. And it's like, okay, so this is probably just a premonition.
Which is weird enough because like I had something similar this week where like I got in an argument with my management at my day job. Uh-huh. And like literally last night I woke up this morning. Hope woke me up. She was like, you were yelling at someone in your sleep.
Damn.
And it was just like, I've been frustrated with the
fuck
management.
You, motherfucker.
Yeah, I've been.
I want that raise, bitch.
Yeah, I've been frustrated with the management at my work, and it translated into my dreams.
Yeah, but you don't remember having a dream of it?
No, I woke up. She was like, woke me up at like 4 or 5 in the morning. She's like, you know, you were yelling at people at your dream. And I guess I told her, I was like, yeah, I was yelling at someone from my work, and I just had a meeting on Wednesday with the management at my work that I was frustrated about. And it was just kind of like one of those things is like, are you dreaming of something because you know how the outcome is going to be, or you're anticipating the outcome to be? And like maybe he knew something already that was going to happen, and he was already living in that danger.
Just waiting for them to break out and show up for that day to happen. Yeah.
And he is waking up to that day. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And anyways.
No, but yeah. So see, it's the same thing. It's a premonition of what's to come. So I don't think it was just a dream. I think it was a premonition of what's to come. Because then remember, it cuts to Juan Valentin walking away from killing Tarzan on the credits.
So I'm like,
okay, I think that's what they're trying to tie in. It's like, okay, it was all a dream, but it was something that actually did happen to him.
You know? Yeah.
So I think that's kind of what it is. The other ending, it's just, it just cuts to him like killing Tarzan. And then he just walks away, and then that's the credits right there. So it's a little confusing, too, when there's those two endings, but they chose the other one as the main one, which is the dream. I guess they wanted it to be more dramatic.
They wanted it to be an art house movie.
Or something. I don't know. But, yeah. But either way, the ending's similar. It's like he still walks away from killing Tarzan.
All right, so the consensus, it actually did happen then. So it's not, it wasn't just a dream.
Not exactly, but yeah, it did happen.
Even though it was presented as a dream.
Yeah, I
think some people are going to... It still is something that is just like you're expecting to happen.
Yeah, I know. Some people are going to be like, oh, that was just a dream. But it's like, oh, maybe, but I don't know. I think it's a premonition. It looks more like a premonition.
I mean, the first time I saw it, I was like, man. Because just like you said, I always...
Cop-out.
It's a cop-out, yeah. Exactly. And like, and the crowd was... At the Frida, the crowd was kind of like, what?
Which like I love. Anytime you hear a response from a crowd when you're screening it,
that means they're engaged.
Theater. Yeah,
yeah,
they're engaged. They have been invested the entire time, and they're upset about it. Like if they weren't invested, they wouldn't be upset.
But yeah,
like they're upset about
yeah.
it, and it's just like, okay, cool. Even if it's a negative response, that means that you were watching this entire time and you were engaged with it.
Yeah. And you know, with that, it's all over, man. You know, this is a fun one. It really is.
Yeah. This was one of the more fun ones. I think even, what was the last time we screened there? Hellstrap,
yeah.
Yeah. I thought this was more fun than Hellstrap.
Yeah. Oh, 1,000%. Yeah.
Yeah. Hellstrap is fun, but this one has a lot more going for sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it was nice. Thank you, Trevor, Dylan, the Frida Cinema
for allowing this
to happen, man.
Like I said, support the Frida Cinema. They're the Orange County's only nonprofit art house theater. They show stuff like this, punks. They show every, like I said, there's always something there for everybody.
SpongeBob.
If you like, hey, if you're not,
if you
want to,
if you
want to
go dance, you can go dance.
Go dance.
You can go throw spoons at the screens.
Yeah, or see a Kurosawa film, whatever. Like I said, that's the thing about the Frida I like is that they have such a big selection of, you know, they curate, you know, whatever, you know, what the people want.
I mean, for fuck's sake, they let Rendezvous. Do a premiere of an international art house movie of someone that I guarantee no one in that crowd has heard of.
How was that screening?
It was fun. It was fun. The turnout wasn't as great, but...
They played Whirlpool after, right?
Yeah, we played Whirlpool afterwards. Okay. What other theater is going to let that... I mean, you know, the director, she was able to fly out and to, you know, engage with people there, which is always fun. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know any other theater that would just take a gamble on an unknown director coming in, doing a premiere there, like...
I mean, the Frida has been so good to us around the like, yeah, it literally it. Like a weekend of double feature Mexican films, grants for making sure it happens, and like, I just you don't see anything else like this happening anywhere else, even in LA County.
Mm-hmm. And then this summer we're gonna have something cool with the Frida, and like I said, I chose the Frida too. Because, again, I felt the Frida deserved this more than anywhere else. You know.
Are we gonna save this for later to unveil? No. Okay.
Yeah, but we'll just say the Frida. That's it. So, so I guess
they'll find out about it eventually. Yeah. So
like I said, we're going to do something cool at the Frida again. Like I said, because again, they're the one theater that really fucks with us. You know, they're really cool with us. And they know what they're doing. The one theater I trust.
All right, so now the final question.
Well, I mean, I trust other theaters, but you know what I mean. no shit. That's
Trash Mac's home base for us. Yeah.
That's always been the home base for sure. Yeah, exactly.
All right, so the final question for the three of us, and we'll go in order, starting with Mikey over there to our far left here. I want to know your top four punk bands or punk movies.
Oh, Jesus Christ, really?
Yeah, we're doing it.
Okay. I used to play in a punk band from 18 to 21, 22. I played in a lot of ska punk bands when I was younger. One of my favorite bands, Leftover Crack.
Nice.
I used to play with. When I stopped being so angry, it was stuff like Descendants.
Yeah.
Descendants was always something I could put on. Adolescence and Circle Jerks were in that kind of like category for me also. I feel like a lot of my stuff kind of leaned into like ska punk type stuff. So like I guess like ska punk. There was this band from I believe New York City, called Mephiscopheles that is still one of my favorite ska punk albums.
Never even heard of it.
Fucking fantastic, fantastic album from late '90s from New York City. A bunch of jazz artists and ska punk people got together, and Mephiscopheles. The first album was God Bless Satan.
Nice.
Fantastic fucking album from like 96 or 97 that I still will go back and listen to this day. Most of my punk stuff has leaned into ska.
Hey, ska deserves it. Yeah. I love ska, man. I went through a ska phase myself, so.
Yeah, Subhumans, Citizen Fish, all those bands like that that I've played with before. I wasn't really like big into like, you know, Fear and all that stuff. That's great and everything, but like these are the bands that I was like I listened to and that I was influenced with even like playing bass in a bunch of these bands. So
Armando,
so let me just put it this way. I have never been punk, quote unquote, but I've always listened to a lot of punk. Even since high school, when I think back, I'm like, damn, I was actually more punk than these fucking kids that I used to hang out with.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because I still listen to a lot of these bands that they would show me and, you know, put me on. These motherfuckers now, they're all with their fucking, like...
They're trollo goss now or what?
Yeah, nah, not even that. They're just a bunch of fools with the Dodger hat, with the fucking Levi's. Well, they're not even Levi's. They're the Wrangler fucking jorts.
Oh, no way.
They're fucking like, they're all dads.
They all work at Birkenstocks and shit.
Yeah, they all work at the fucking construction companies or some shit. Or they have their own. Some of them did go on to do good stuff. But most of the time, they were just a bunch of fucking posers straight up.
Damn.
I was probably the only one that was not punk, but punk. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, even now, like, I feel like I'm probably more punk than these guys ever were in their whole phase. Because they're all a bunch of little sellouts and they don't listen to it. They're like, oh, I never really liked the Misfits. And I'm like, okay, but you got the fucking Misfits tattoo on you.
I know plenty of people with Misfits tattoos.
That's what I'm saying.
That probably could only name
it was
like
always
two
just
songs.
It was always just a style for a lot of these people that I knew growing up, you know. And I was always the one idiot that was like, you know, like actually into it, you know. But yeah, so bands. I mean, I think Misfits were one of the main ones. Damn, Mikey.
Yeah, this one, Mikey's dying over here.
Cholo God. Oh, we got to leave the Cholo God part in.
Cholo goth.
I don't know any cholo goth actually. Oh, I've seen them, but I don't know any of them.
Fuck. I'm sorry, guys.
No, you're good. You're good. Yeah, we'll figure it out. Yeah. Okay.
So the Misfits, Armando, number one. So Mikey's died.
Cholo goth. I didn't even know that was a thing until recently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's been a thing, dude. Yeah, it's been a thing.
Yeah. So like I said, Misfits were probably the first ones I remember being exposed to with punk. And actually really liking, like I said, I was like, wow. And this is already because I was already into horror movies. So a lot of the punk guys would be like, oh, listen to the Misfits. You would like them. They'd sing about horror movies and stuff. I was like, all right. And yeah, sure enough, I was like, okay, yeah, they're fucking cool, you know. And then I started reading about the history. I was like, wow, Glenn Danzig's fucking really inspirational. Like, this motherfucker rose up and everything. He did everything himself. He built this whole fucking empire with Jerry and everything. So Misfits would for sure be, like, number one. And then, like, Germs, I would say, is kind of inspirational for me, too, just because it was all, you know, do-it-yourself. And they were kind of just, like, you know, they were always so rough. You know, they would always get kicked out of shows or whatever. Darby Crash was just a mess.
Yeah, they were definitely the heavies of the LA scene for sure.
Even though Darby was such a mess, and you know, he ended up, you know, killing himself, you know, so young. It's like he's so inspirational today, you know, and so many people are so fascinated by his lore and everything. So yeah, Germs for sure, and like their one album is super fucking catchy. I play that often.
It's a classic, yeah.
It's a classic album, yeah. Oh yeah, you put What We Do Is Secret, and you're just like, hell yeah, let's get this going. You know, let's get the fucking day going. So Germs, Misfits, and then the last one, Crass. You know, I got into Crass much later on though in my life. I was probably like 25, 26 when I actually finally got around to listening to Crass. I was like, oh shit, these guys are fucking great. And then reading about them and seeing some of their interviews online, I was like, wow, okay, these guys are actually like the granddaddies of punk, I think. You know,
these guys really
started a fucking movement. You know, these guys are awesome. They're not just a whole, you know, they're not just like a little symbol like the Misfits skull. You know, like these guys actually are, you know, they're inspirational. You know, their music is cool. And it makes sense, you know, like of society, of what was going on then and everything.
Yeah.
They actually lived by the values that they preached in their music with like squatting and everything like that. They actually like lived that life compared to a lot of these
and
other
then,
artists.
Like, they would even like tell people like, yeah, bootleg our music if you want. We don't give a fuck, you know. We want you to listen to our music. So, yeah. You know, so Crass, Misfits, and Germs for sure. Top
three. Yeah, that's a good top three.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Joey?
Well, so although I grew up listening to like the skater punk of the 90s, but by the time I hit 11, my life changed and went straight into hardcore. So I didn't get into punk until later. But I think my top, so what I'm going to, I'll do my top four LA punk hardcore bands, okay, just, you know, to keep it local.
What got you into hardcore?
I heard Hatebreed, Satisfaction is the Death of Desire for the first time, and it blew my fucking mind. And I said, this is the best music I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, yeah.
That was on a Victory comp I think that comp came out in 97 or 98, something like that. I didn't hear it until early 2000. And, yeah, it changed my fucking life. And so we'll do top four L.A., you know, punk hardcore bands for me would be The Stains, The Weirdos, Germs, and Black Flag.
Yeah, Weirdos are great.
Yeah, Weirdos are the shit, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My all-time favorite punk band, Misfits, of course. I mean, I had heard Misfits in the 90s when I was in elementary school. Misfits would be my number one punk band of all time. But as far as L.A. top four, yeah, it would be Stains, Weirdos, Germs, and Black Flag for sure. I just think that first Black Flag Nervous Breakdown is like a seminal L.A. sound. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, like that really formed for my ears at least, what the LA punk hardcore scene was and is supposed to be, and even now sets a standard to what it should be.
Yeah, good call. Yeah.
That what spray paint Nervous Breakdown.
The 7-inch.
Yeah.
That has Fix Me, Wasted, Nervous Breakdown. Yep. Yeah. I just think it's like I think it's only like 7 minutes or so. Not even 7 minutes. I think it's like 6 minutes. Just crude, fast. It's top 10 45 release of all time in my opinion. And yeah, there it is. I'm sure people are gonna hate those all of our picks, but whatever. Yeah.
They're gonna be like fucking posers.
That's not a punk band.
Yeah.
Now we named. I know they're like the most obvious names, but like no, these are
no. They're seminal.
Yeah, they're seminal. They're fucking inspired the other ones later on. You know.
Yeah.
Misfits inspired so many bands, especially with the do-it-yourself, you know, spirit and everything.
Well, you think of the Misfits. Sorry to go on another tangent, but it's like you look at the Misfits and what they accomplished. In such a short span, and then they were pretty much non-existent for how many years, you know, until Jerry Olney got the band back together with Doyle and completely changed the sound. But, everyone formed their band based off of what the Misfits were doing afterwards, you know, after they had already broken up and went on their own, and Danzig was doing Sam Hang and then, eventually his own solo Danzig project.
Yeah. And then the thing I liked about the Misfits is how the designs was just all made by, Glenn, you know. Glenn made all the designs. He appropriated a lot of the images, especially the Crimson, skull, the Crimson Ghost skull. But look where it is now. He made that fucking thing, the symbol of the band, and it's everywhere now.
Oh, yeah, the iconography of the Misfits is the shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I will go on record in saying that the Misfits, they are a punk band, but they have one absolute classic hardcore record to me. Everything else that they did was punk.
Yeah, sure.
But, yeah.
But even then, see, that's the thing. They went with a different sound after. See, that's what makes them so inspiring, too. Yeah. Like they went with a different sound that they knew was picking up at the time. So, yeah, for sure. But yeah, we pick good ones, I think. If you call those posers, fuck you guys. You guys are
posers. All right. Well, we're talking in circles now, so let's wrap it up. We are gonna put in here after the Frida show. We did have a couple people come and talk to us, and we did a little interview. I'm not really a good journalist and interviewer, so my questions probably sucked. And but I'll get better at it eventually. So we're just gonna play the top three or four responses that we got as far as like in-depth answers from the audience and
thank
stuff.
Thank you guys for coming back out and having to talk with Joey. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, like I said, I'll get better at it, and hopefully we can do this a little bit more often and get the crowd involved with the show and kind of you know, get people's thoughts on what they think about Mexican movies and absolutely. Stuff. So
I was stoked to see people actually hang around after the show and like ready to talk about the movie.
You know, they were eager. The first guy was like, wait, like antsy. Yeah, he was like ready to talk. So, you know, thanks to all you guys. Yeah, we'll play it right now. Armando does have something very special planned coming up that we don't want to, you know, talk about yet, or he doesn't want to talk about yet, I don't think. So,
well, I mean, but whenever this episode, I mean, they'll probably already know. But even then, it's like, you know, we hope to see you guys in the summer and hope you guys bring out everybody, you know. Yeah, bring out the family, bring out your tia, your tio, bring out some of your punk friends if you have punk friends, you know. Because, I mean, you know, everybody is welcome for these next screenings that are coming, you know. Not for the punks anymore.
Unless you're a hater, then we'll kick you out.
It's for everybody. Yeah, these screens are going to be for everybody. That's all I'll say.
I'm stoked about these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll, you know, like as we always do, there'll be a little bit of a clip after these these little interviews here to give you guys a little hint of what's coming up. The next month episode, it'll drop in June. And, we'll see you guys soon.
Yeah, we'll see you guys at the Frida, probably, hopefully, too.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you guys
for coming. Of course, thanks for coming. Thanks for a good convo.
We're at the new house, by the way, new headquarters.
New headquarters, top secret bat cave over here.
It's Chino, California.
Oh, shit.
It's just Chino, guys. All right, bye, guys.
Have a good one.
Peace.
All right, here we go. We are live with the inside of the Frida Cinema. We just finished watching Venganza de los Punks. I'm standing here with
Miguel Núñez.
Now, I gotta say, this is one of the craziest movies to experience inside of a theater, right?
Yeah, I loved it.
It's fantastic. So if you can just describe this movie for people that are listening that haven't seen this movie, how would you describe this movie?
Well, it's so funny because we begin the following this band of punks. They call them punks, but originally it's more of a gang of they're dressed very exotic, like 80s type, very violent, sexual and drugly driven, and. But what I love about the film is that, I mean, they kill the family of this cop. But then we follow the revenge of the cop. And then kind of like the vigilante becomes like a psychopath or more of a serial killer for the punk gang. So that was amazing for me.
A little bit of justice replaced by revenge, right? There's quite a few kills in this movie, right? So just from watching this right now, what would you say would be your favorite kill of the movie?
I think my favorite kill was the guy that was killed by it was a stake going through his mouth.
Oh, yeah. That was Oja, the guy who tried to overthrow Tarzan himself, right? So what do you think? How does this movie correlate to punk, do you think? Do you think it's a punk movie or is it not a punk movie?
You know, it's funny because it's not really a punk movie. However, looking at the credits, the music was composed and played by Three Souls in My Mind, which is El Tri, which is amazing.
Very good call out. So I guess we'll just kind of wrap it. We got a couple people here. So just final question, just personal taste here. Give me your top four favorite punk rock bands.
Punk rock, or
punk rock movies or anything related to punk.
Related to punk. Let me see. Sex Pistols, The Clash, probably this movie. The Revenge of the Punks, La Venganza de los Punks, and there is this record from actually it's a ska band, but his record is called Punk Rock Mi Vida Está Bien from Chelsea. That's funny. I like it.
Good call out, man. Well, we appreciate you coming out and hope you enjoyed the movie. You grab yourself a gift already?
I'm about to.
Perfect. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. All right, here we go. Who am I standing with here?
Mitch Luna.
Now, give me your initial thoughts on it. Have you seen this movie before?
Oh, no. First time I'd ever seen it. I love how many different outfits Tarzan had throughout. Like, he must have had, he was stunting in like 5 different outfits. I wish there was a scene you'd just see his wardrobe of just different costumes he'd put on. And another thing I caught is I love that scene in the first act with the dudes holding up a store and robbing it. That had absolutely nothing to do with the rest of the plot, like, whatsoever. And the place was a fucking video store rental. It's not even, like, a high-value place to rob. They're just shooting up a video club. I got lost in my train of thought. But
hey, that's perfect. I'm glad you called that out, because I noticed that tonight, too. Hey, man, that's a fucking video store there.
Yeah. Like, what, they got, like, 200 pistols or something. It's a video store, dude.
And also glad that you called out Tarzan and all his outfits, too. I don't know if you're familiar with who he is as a wrestler or his lineage and how he kind of relates to Lucha. Are you familiar with that at all?
No, but I'm definitely going to go down a rabbit hole, because the dude is pretty badass.
Yeah, he really is badass. So with that in mind, I'm going to ask you the same question. Is your first time seeing it? Out of all the kills in the movie, call out your favorite kill.
Oh, man, there's so many good kills, and he was so unconventional. I love that he used both snakes and spiders. It's like, damn, like, where did he get those? He just goes back to his hideout in between eating, like, sardine sandwiches, and he just has a stash of spiders. But I think favorite kill overall, probably the acid to the face. That was good. I didn't see that one coming. I'll go with that.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite kill as well. Okay, so with that in mind, do we have any more things to give away? How many things do we have left? We have 2 left? Okay. And he's taking the Blu-ray, folks. Appreciate you coming out. Hope you enjoyed the night. All right, and who are we standing here with?
With Alan.
Alan, so have you seen this movie before?
No, I have not.
Have you seen the original movie, the part one?
No, I have not.
Okay, so you're fresh to this one. Give me your initial reactions. Was this over the top? Was it not enough? What was your favorite thing about this?
This was amazing. This got me like a throwback when I used to go with my uncle to the video store, and they had the curtains, and he'd just go inside the curtain, and I'd be like, what the hell is he doing? And we'd come back, he'd get the popcorn, and next thing you know, he just pop it in the VHS and inside the DVD, and we just see some like crazy ass like kills. It just threw me back to my uncle. It was amazing. Back to like my culture and shit.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, yeah. What's he got on right there? Oh, okay, for the listeners, he's got a Buki shirt on. We did an episode on the Bukis a couple episodes ago, so I mean. Great shirt. Same question for you. Out of all the kills in the movie, which one was your favorite?
It would be the pull through the mouth. It just reminded me of Deanna Jones. It was crazy.
Oh, yeah, he deserved it, though. He was a piece of shit. He deserved it.
Yeah, fucking snitch-ass traitor.
Hey, snitches get stitches. Okay, so let's run this off here. What are your top 4 favorite punk rock bands? If you listen to punk you listen to punk, all right. What are your top 4 favorite punk rock bands?
In Espanol, it would be Escrobuto. That's my top first. El Tri is rock. I mean, classic rock, but it'd be Escrobuto, Section Hate. Shout out to LA and Dead City Punks. I mean, Dead City is they be doing a lot of movement in LA right now.
Hey, good call out. Calling out for the LA culture. One more question. Let's go. Favorite Bookie song?
I have a lot, but it'd have to be for Marc Antonio Solis. It'd be like, shit. You got me right there. My mind just scrambled right there, but it's from Marc Antonio Solis. Right now, I can't really think about it, but yeah. My grandma used to sing to it all the time, but I forgot. So, fuck. My bad, güey.
Se
me olvidé, güey.
Se le fue el onda, se le fue el onda. It's all good, it's all good. Well, I hope you appreciated the show tonight. Thank you for coming.
I've been following Trash Mac since he started. Trash Mac has been like putting on for the city and putting a lot of archives. Like I said, like I've been watching a lot of like movies with my uncle, and we used to go to the video store, and it just throws me back. This brings me a lot of.
There it is. He's getting the 38 Especial VHS. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Of course. Yeah, I do. I collect VHSs. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, once again, thanks for coming out. Appreciate it, man. Hope you had a great time.
No, I did.
Gracias. Yeah. Thank you. All right, and who are we standing here with?
I'm John Bauer.
John Bauer. Now, are you familiar with this film? Have you seen this film before?
No, I'd only seen Intrepido Spunks before this.
Good. So you're one of the four people who had actually seen a Punks movie before.
Yeah. When I saw Venganza was coming out, I had bought the Blu-ray from Vinegar Syndrome, and so I'm like, oh, I better watch the first one so I'm not totally confused by the plot.
And, okay, so were you confused? Because some people would say that this movie is completely separate from the first movie.
No, I mean, it picks up right where the first one lets off. They all get, the surviving ones get put in jail, and then, as with the first one, they get busted out by the female leader of the gang, and then it's just back to normal. We're raiding liquor stores and video stores and people's homes just for no reason at all, and then we're camping out of the exact same place that the first movie ended at. It was nice to know that there was some continuity there.
I agree. Okay, so since you have seen both now, which one would you say you prefer more, the original Intrepidos Punks or Venganza de los Punks?
I think I prefer Intrepidos Punks. That one, it's mostly about the gang. They're pulling off hijinks. They're playing their theme song constantly. They're rolling out in the road hooting and hollering. They're making drug deals. Like, they're on top of the world. Here, it's like they bust out of jail. They're right at the top, but then for the rest of the movie, they're just kind of sitting around getting killed. Like, every time one of them gets killed, they're like, okay, I got a plan. Towards the very end, he's like, I got a plan. We'll send each of us out one by one to get killed, and then that's my plan.
It kind of falls in line with Death Wish 3. Have you seen that?
Yeah, a lot like that. And, I mean, especially towards the end, the cop character starts to seem more like Jason Voorhees than just like a vengeful cop. Like, he's really getting twisted with some of that stuff.
Okay, so with that in mind, let's get a call out. What's your favorite kill in the movie?
It's got to be Beto. He's just walking around with a flashlight, and then out of nowhere, just lops his head right off. He's not knocking him out and handcuffing him and dragging him back to his villa to torture him. He's just like, boom, you're dead right there. And then he, like, throws his head at somebody else and then just takes off. He's like, I'm not babysitting this one. This guy's just dead.
And you can even see his Liberty spikes kind of flopping around, too, when his head starts flying off there.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thanks for coming out, man. I hope you enjoyed the second one as much as you do the first one. I don't know if we have anything left, Armando, to give out. But
you've given me so much entertainment over the years. Anytime you want to do these shows, I will be there. Trash Mechs for life.
And you heard it there. Trash Mechs for life, man. Thanks for coming out, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, they all ran away. All right, here we go. So who are we here with?
My name is Hope.
And Hope, have you seen this movie before?
I haven't. This is my first time.
And have you seen the original?
I haven't. So seeing this one is, I'm excited to see the first one now.
Yeah, I think the first one is definitely a must watch. Give us a little rundown. If you can describe this movie in a sentence or two for people that haven't seen it, how would you describe it?
I'll give you a long-winded one. It reminds me a little bit of Death Wish 3, but also Darktown Strutters. It has kind of like that biker aesthetic meets like 80s, you know, punk, Mexican punk aesthetic. So I really enjoyed that.
That's a good call out. A lot of people say Mad Max, but I don't really see Mad Max. This is not a post-apocalyptic movie. So Darktown Strutters is a really good call out. Now, I do know you like punk music, so let's hear. Give me your letterbox for of punk movies or bands.
I can't give you that. Honestly, I really can't. But what I will say about this, for anybody that's listening that hasn't seen this, I feel like it has everything you could possibly need. You've got, like, swastika booty. It's got busty women. Death by, like, deadly vipers, poisonous tarantulas, acid to the face. I don't know. It's pretty much got everything you need in it. And I really loved that it was very much like punks versus one cop on this tirade and revenge-seeking adventure to get justice for his family. So,
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that the cop kind of was like, man, fuck being a cop. I just want to kill these motherfuckers, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like a lot of people liked a lot of the other deaths, but the death by fire torture was awesome because you could really see the rage in his eyes, and he was really enjoying it at that point. So, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, I think the death by fire is probably my favorite kill. So I think, it's the shit right there.
Well, thank you guys for showing this at the Frida, and I hope you guys do more stuff like this.
Thanks for coming out, Hope, and I guess we're wrapping it up here.
Próximamente estrenaremos...
Con esta inyección y los rayos que van a penetrar en su cerebro, seré dueño de su voluntad. Conecten los electrodos.
No cabe duda, doctor, que con sus inventos nos traeremos en jaque.